I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, it's hot out, but the government wants you to suffer to help fulfill Governor Jay Inslee's climate goals. Plus,
she told the boys in the class that if they wake up with a, quote, B-L-N-E-R, to just rub it out.
Just how difficult is it for parents to hold rogue teachers accountable? And after a deadly shooting at the Alderwood Mall, the Linwood Police Chief joins us to talk about some of the challenges they face in holding juvenile offenders accountable.
The problem I have is that there are times where juveniles are doing very adult-type crimes.
That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support this show of ours for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. It's hot. It's so hot out. Oh, it's just miserable. Just, it's so hot. I'm so sweaty.
I'm not miserable.
Oh, Nicole loves the heat.
I like the heat.
I hate the heat. It's awful. So of course what you do, right? You just, you know, you get the AC turned up. Unless, of course, you want to help the government make sure that Jay Inslee can live up to his climate expectations, then you would just sweat it out in the name of climate justice. If you're a Puget Sound Energy customer, you've probably got a voicemail similar to this.
This is an alert from Puget Sound Energy. Today, Monday, July 8th, there is a flex event from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Join your community in reducing energy use at home. After the event is over, we will send you energy savings insights. Save by charging electronic devices beforehand and delaying the use of large appliances. Thank you for your help conserving energy during this flex event. Your participation has a positive impact.
That is from viewer Daniel. Thank you for sending that over to us. I know a lot of people got a phone call, picked up the phone, and that was the recording that they had. So what is a flex event? What does it mean for you? I want to clear up maybe some misconceptions or some false information online about it, and then we'll talk about just generally what's going on here. Because there have been some stories, you know, out of California and stuff where you have the government going in and manually turning down people's thermostats, et cetera. And there's this question about, can they do that without your permission? Blah. So let's discuss. So PSE put out this video a few months ago on their Flex program. Here it is.
Now you can get rewards for helping your community rely on cleaner energy. Introducing PSE Flex. PSE Flex helps you shift your energy use away from times when demand is highest. So eventually we can rely on more wind and solar energy, helping us create a cleaner energy future and earning you rewards. Think of it as a little thank you from us and the planet. Sign up and start getting rewards at pse.com/flex.
So that's like an admission that their clean energy isn't reliable right now. That's what that is, right? It's an admission that the clean energy they want to rely on and that Governor Jay Inslee wants to rely on isn't reliable. And I mean, that's just clear, right? And so I guess the only way we can rely on clean energy is if we just don't use energy. Like, that's the only way it's reliable, is if you just turn it off when you most need it and the system is like overburdened. And I think one of the interesting things here, and I'll get to the flex frequently asked questions about all that stuff and how this works, etc., is we just had lawmakers propose a bill at the beginning of this year that would have banned natural gas. Remember, when they proposed 1589, that's what it was. It was a natural gas ban. It was reducing energy choice, therefore reducing redundancy in the system and energy diversification. When they know that we get one hot streak and it's like you're asking people to stop using energy. And so now, you know, they had to water down 1589. So it wasn't a ban on natural gas. It was starting and speeding up the move away from natural gas. But I mean, come on, that's what they want to do. They said they wanted to do it. They put it in a bill. They weren't able to accomplish it this year, but they're trying to accomplish it. Meanwhile, PSC acknowledges, like, yeah, we can't, our clean natural or clean energy options aren't reliable right now. So that's why we have to push out voicemails to all our users, just asking them to turn off their electricity or turn off their energy and just not use anything. So that's one of the reasons I think you saw such popularity in Initiative 2066, which would preserve natural gas as an option. And I hope it's successful in November, because if not, then that just gives the green light for lawmakers to move ahead with banning natural gas. But I don't even know how you can seriously have the conversation about reducing our energy options when what happens, like, we have such rare severe weather events in Washington state. We are blessed to have a very temperate climate. And you get, that's why a lot of places don't have air conditioning built in. It's like, it very rarely gets hot enough to need air conditioning. And in the winter, we have what, maybe one or two severe weather events every single year. Our system isn't designed to keep up, even in the rare instance where we have a severe energy issue, a severe weather event. And now they want to reduce energy choice when they're acknowledging that their clean energy that we have right now, the system isn't to the point where it's reliable enough. It's just all ridiculous to me. So just frequently asked questions Puget Sound Energy answered on its website about the Flex event. In case you're curious, like, are they, if I got that voicemail, does that mean they're just going to turn my stuff off without asking? So no, they're not going to, in theory. How does PSC, first of all, if you are participating in the Flex program, one of their things to get you to do it is it's going to save you money. They're like, oh, hey, people who we overburden with taxes and high energy rates, we'll throw you a couple pennies if you turn off your air conditioning during this very severe heat wave when it's 95 degrees. How does PSC determine how much energy I save during a Flex event? It says, we calculate your energy savings for each Flex event using a baseline. This baseline is created by averaging the energy consumption of the four highest usage days among 5 weekdays before the event. We also consider energy usage in the 2 hours before the event and the hour after the event. So basically, if they see that you're using less energy than average, then you get some pennies thrown back at you. Do I have to reduce my energy usage during a Flex event? They say no. Reducing energy usage during a Flex event is 100% voluntary for customers. There is no requirement to participate. Will PSE shut off my power during a Flex event? No, PSE will not disconnect customers' power in response to increased demand. However, it is possible that a power outage might coincide with a Flex event due to circumstances such as inclement weather. For customers in the Flex Smart program, PSE is only authorized to auto-adjust their smart thermostat or other smart device during Flex events, but participation is always voluntary. So look, I think there's a give and a take there. People sign up for that. So you can get a smart thermostat and some smart lights and stuff, and they can go in there if you've signed up for it. And yeah, they can turn your thermostat down. But you asked for it, right? And if you're signed up for that, will you please tell me, like, why you were motivated to do it and why it doesn't concern you that the energy entity will have access to your thermostat? Because that just freaks me out. I just would never allow it. I want to know how many people have signed up for that. How many people would let the government, in essence, go in and say, hey, we're going to turn down your air conditioning, or turn your air conditioning or your heat up. Like, I just don't understand who would do that. That's wild to me. All right, let's get to some helpful tips. If you're sweltering today, if you're just miserable, let's see what Puget Sound Energy is offering for tips. Enjoy unplugged activities during Flex events. So if you're like, I really want to help conserve energy, just go outside. Just go to the beach. Like, you don't have, they have no confidence in our energy grid. So they're like, you know, just turn everything off in your home and go bake in the sun by the beach.
Take the day off work.
It says, put off running the dishwasher or doing laundry until after the Flex event. Instead of watching TV or using electronics that need to be plugged in, read a book. Play a board game or spend quality time with your household. Look, some of that's fine. If you want to do that, that's no big deal. Mike and I don't run the, the dryer because it's hot.
Right.
Not because we necessarily are worried about energy consumption, but because it heats up the whole home. So we're not going to use anything right. That is going to emit any sort of heat into an, because we only have AC in one room. So we're going to keep the rest of the house low heat. Right. Like even blow dryers. I ain't turned that blow dryer on. Like, no way, because that's just going to heat the place up. Turn off your lights when they're not in use. Okay, most people do that anyway. Use a plug-in power meter to save. So they want you to use this power meter to plug into all your devices, like your coffee maker, so you can see just how much energy it's using, and you can decide to unplug it. I don't know. Some of this stuff is like, I think people do that anyway. If you have something that sucks a lot of energy, people are so poor right now with all the taxes and all the costs that the government puts down, they're trying to save money any way they can. So if there's an opportunity for them to save money during a hot weather event, something they're not using anyway, they're just going to do it. But I love this, like, go cook in the sun. And at the same time, they're encouraging people to come use their cooling centers. So it's like, which one is it? Do you want us to turn off everything and go bake in the sun on the beach? Or do you want us to come into a big building like a library that costs a ton of money and takes a lot of energy to cool down? Which is it?
Well, don't plug in electronics or whatever. Again, people have to work. These things,
right.
I mean, this is life. Most people do watch TV in the evenings and do their laundry at night, but this is life. We all have to just keep living through the heat.
We just do. And I suppose we could have faked a power outage today, Nicole, or we could have said Puget Sound Energy has asked us
to flex.
To flex. And so we're going to just not do the show.
We should do that on Thursday.
Oh, good idea, Nicole. Good idea. All right. I asked you guys at our daily subscribers show poll. I asked, during a heat wave, are you inclined to take proactive steps to conserve your energy use? I think I asked you guys a similar poll question back when the Flex program came out and all this scandal in California, or maybe it was Colorado, where people's thermostats were being turned down without their permission. So let's see. A lot of you are saying no. If we would stop selling our water to California and stop setting fires for federal money, we wouldn't need to. And notice we never ever have had a fire season before 2017. Sheila, well, I can say yes right now, but I've got 4 fans running in my house plus a portable AC unit. I'd say that's not conserving too much energy, but when I can afford it, I'm going to get a heat pump. Steve S., the fact that they want to convert everything from gas to electric tells me they have plenty of electric power, so why conserve? That's a good point, Steve. What is it? I mean, you want everyone on electricity, so certainly you have an abundance of electrical power to go around for everyone, like, no big deal, right?
I was just talking to Todd Myers yesterday, and he said it's so funny when they push everybody to they want people to do electric and the wind dies down when it gets hot like this.
Yeah,
the electricity supply lowers,
right?
Because the wind is not producing through the wind propel, whatever,
right?
What are they called? Wind propellers.
I don't know. Turbine.
There we go.
Propeller, turbine. Doesn't matter.
anyway, it's a thing.
Hugh says, yes, I do, but it's really more to pat myself on the back than any serious effort. Ollie says, we cover up our skylight and keep our curtains closed, but I paid good money for my heat pump, so I'm using it. You use it.
Do it.
You use it, Ollie. I support that wholeheartedly. So anyway, let us know how you're making it through the heat wave and if you plan to participate in the PSE Flex event. Like, look, if I'm not going to be home anyway, and PSE is going to pay me, right, to reduce my energy consumption, then yes. But if that requires me also giving them control over my thermostat or literally anything in my home, absolutely not.
I know.
Under no circumstances.
I'm all for making my home smart. And I try to smart everything. I have, you know, this heater sitting right here is connected to my phone, right?
Keep that heater off. Nicole's obsessed with being hot. When I came in on Monday, I half expected the heat to be on and I was ready. I was going to strangle her, actually. I was going to strangle her.
But that is the one thing it will never be controlled by anybody else but me.
Hell no. I mean, no. I barely get control over the heat at home. Mike keeps it freezing in the winter. I was like, I remember when we first started dating, you know, and I was first starting to sleep over at his house. And it's still that awkward phase where you don't really want to say anything. It was like, it was so cold. And I'm just like, this man might be mental. I was like, he might be an Eskimo. This is a problem. That's so funny. Yeah, I need to take back control from Mike.
Do it.
I'm gonna take back control. I'm going to tell him how it is. I'm going to take control.
I would actually like to be there for that.
Oh, good. Good stuff. Okay. We thought we'd start with that just because I didn't want to start with this next story because it's so deeply depressing. And I was like, let's have fun with the heat wave before we get into the depressing nature of our state's education system. But here we are. So we have talked a lot, and I think we've done perhaps more than most in pointing out some of these rogue educators across our public school system. But really, the more and more stories we do, we start to have this realization that maybe it's not rogue educators. Maybe it's educators who are doing exactly what the system wants them to do. Just a couple of the major stories we've done, some exclusives in the last 2 years that you all will be familiar with by now. We did a story on a teacher named Jennifer Knight, an elementary teacher in the Olympia School District, whose student suddenly was coming to school, biological girl, was saying she was a boy, felt like she was definitely indoctrinated to do that based on everything we know. And this teacher, Jennifer Knight, was carrying on a private, secretive communication with this student saying, I kept emailing you. I was worried your mom interfered. I would take you into my home anytime you need, directing the student, make sure this email is deleted when we're done. Otherwise, when your mom looks, you'll be outed instantly. I mean, completely inappropriate. So we did that story. We were never able to find out. We were never told what, if any, discipline Jennifer Knight received from the Olympia School District. Fast forward to a couple weeks ago, where we started a series of stories on a 7th and 8th grade math and science teacher in the Olympia School District named Karina Champion, who a 6th grader recorded going on some crazy rant about Ronald Reagan and Trayvon Martin. Here's a short clip of that.
A white supremacist was following him in his truck and yelling at him, and then got out and killed him.
And come to find out that that wasn't the first time Karina Champion had done something crazy in one of her classes. She brought a dildo to class in 2019 for a sex ed lesson parents hadn't even been told was coming up. And there was other things in the class that students came out and told their parents about. One of the things talking about, you know, ways to avoid getting pregnant, having, you know, the other type of sex that can't result in pregnancy, and then sterilization. Didn't even talk about abstinence as a way to avoid getting pregnant. Talked about permanent sterilization to seventh graders, medical sterilization, and then talked about, you know, backdoor sex as a way to, sorry, Nicole's looking at me. I don't know if I can say the word. I can't afford any YouTube strikes right now. So to seventh graders, I mean, and I believe the kids, given her history, I absolutely believe everything the kids have to say about what she said in that class. And we don't know. We know that Karina Champion managed to keep her job after that sex ed lesson, if you can even call it that. And we don't even, after we revealed the story of what happened in when she visited a sixth grade science class to teach them, give them a presentation on making a quilt about bugs and plants, and it turned into a rant about Ronald Reagan's a homophobe and Trayvon Martin was killed by a white supremacist. We don't know if she's going to be disciplined. We don't know what the extent of that discipline would be, despite her clearly violating some district policies on controversial lessons. So that brings us to our guest today. We've had Alicia Perkins on the show many times. So Alicia Perkins grew up in the Olympia School District, went there herself. I don't know if she still has kids. Did her final kid graduate, or are they still in school? I think she sent several kids through the Olympia School District. I think she might still have one in the Olympia School District. And one of the things she's been looking into is just how difficult it is for parents to pursue any sort of complaint or discipline against a teacher who might blatantly violate policies. And it turns out if you're a parent who's concerned, there aren't a lot of tools at your disposal to be able to hold teachers accountable. Alicia Perkins, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks, Brandy.
Yeah, before we dive into this important topic, I've got to ruin your day a little bit. You ready?
Yes.
Wow, she's very eager. She's like, yes, ruin my day. Well, people might not know this, but sometimes you have a place in Idaho, so you'll go there, you know, in the summer and stuff. Did you know that you might get a new neighbor?
Oh, I think I read that this morning and I was like, it can't be true.
Inslee, your new neighbor is going to be Jay Inslee. Allegedly, yeah. He's going to retire in Idaho.
Yes, my stomach sank a little bit when I read that.
I figured, you know, here you think you're getting away from it all. Nope, he's going to follow you. So, you know, maybe he'll buy the house right next year. I don't know. So I just wanted to let you know about that. So we obviously have done, and really not without you. I don't think any of the stories that we've done on the Olympia School District would have been possible without your connections that you have with parents and students and teachers. So we thank you for that. But, you know, I think one of the lingering questions we always have when we do these stories, like Karina Champion and, you know, every crazy stuff going on with her, is what happens to the teachers? You know, we're never allowed to know. Parents tell us that they aren't allowed to know. So from everything that you've dug into and all the stories that you've uncovered, is there any way to find out, besides just through like the rumor grapevine, is there any way to know what disciplinary action has been taken against a teacher, if any?
Not really. The only way to know is to maybe get investigation reports like came out with Champion, where the investigators did find that she was in violation of certain things. But beyond that, when it goes to what the consequences are with the school district, they will not tell us. And, you know, for parents who've tried to go beyond the school district to, for example, report a teacher, when the school district will just do nothing, what they have found is there's an absolute dead end. So, for example, if you try to go to OSPI at the state level to report a teacher, it looks like there is a way to report, but then what it actually says is the only people that can open up an investigation is the school superintendent.
Wow.
So if you're in a school district like ours, where, you know, we have teachers with obviously multiple violations of several things who have been found in violation of several things, it really dies with the school district.
Yeah. So parents can request it, but a request from a parent to investigate a teacher doesn't mean anything if the superintendent doesn't want to investigate them.
That's correct.
And I think what's troubling about that in Olympia, for instance, you know, the stories we've covered are just the tip of the iceberg. And from my perspective, and you can feel free to disagree, it seems like the school district there is fine with what these teachers are doing and you know, maybe even encourages it. So I don't have a lot of faith, I guess, that the school that has fostered this environment would turn around and hold teachers accountable for being part of that environment.
Well, I mean, you're exactly right. And that's what I found after almost 2 years of doing this, is that we really have a school district that has been taken over, I would say infiltrated by a very, very radical school board. And to their credit, they have been elected. So the community is responsible for some of this. But, you know, we have 5 school board directors that are radically political, that have made very clear, no secret about their intention to push social activism in school. And I mean, I can give you a couple examples that I pulled up of Please. Some of the board statements. You know, we have Scott Clifthorn, one of our board directors, who recently in April said he ran because Trumpism was taking over schools. He goes on to say that people are complaining about the board's woke politics, making people leave the district, and reminds us that they were elected to be at the front, so it's not stopping. He then says, if anyone has a problem with that, because you don't want to be in a school district where those are the values, then bye. And he waves at the camera.
As long as I'm in this community, the pride proclamations are going to keep happening. The Black Lives Matter proclamations are going to keep happening. We will continue to invest in these schools until they're safe and equitable places for all students, irrespective of their color, their skin, their gender identity and gender expression. And if anyone has a problem with that, because you don't want to be in a school district where those are the values, bye.
Wow. So openly taunting people to leave. I mean, we had a school board director who released a video before her election in November, Jess Palumbo, you know, doing an anti-police rant for about 2 minutes.
Law enforcement and SROs come from the seed of racism. And you can rename them something, and you can try to create different branches. But if that seed is still there, it's going to create the same problem.
She went to an anti-police rally in November put on by students where they were screaming at the police. She got on the microphone and said she fully supported everyone there. Our board president last year said it's their paramount duty to raise activists. One of our school board directors, you know, posts on social media, her dressed up as Handmaid's Tale and RBG. So, I mean, I could go on and on and on with what our school board has directly said, you know, that they're about. And then if you look at teacher quotes, I mean, I just did a quick search for some teacher quotes on their own bios that you can see on the district website. I mean, they make perfectly clear that they're supported by the board with doing activism in class. One of the teachers said, when parents, families, community members show up to complain about any lessons that bring up equity or the 13 pillars of BLM movement, I have an easy and solid defense that we are supported by the school board. And I can name, you know, many other examples.
I'm sorry, Alicia, that line you just read, that is something a teacher wrote? That was a quote?
Yes, that is a quote on a public social media page that was discussing parents who had an issue with some of the BLM teaching. And I can tell you what some of those are. This went out from the teaching and learning department at the Olympia School District for teachers to teach. And this was for BLM curriculum. When you open the curriculum, which I did and read through all of it, they start with their foundation. Their foundation is a collective guided by core principles that are grounded in Black feminist framework, Black queer feminist anti-capitalist politics, abolitionist politics, and approach to restorative and transformative justice. It goes on to say teaching is activism. They go through their 13 principles that are supposed to be taught to the kids. I mean, just a couple of them are, we need not qualify our position, first of all, they say. We oppose the practice that demands double duty, where one is expected to parent, but also engage in public work. We disrupt the narrow Western prescribed nuclear family. Trans-affirming, we do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege. We uplift Black trans folks, especially Black trans women. Queer-affirming, we want to remove the tight grip of cis-hetero-patriarchal assumptions. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, where any reasonable person would say, hey, you know, this seems like there should be a different viewpoint, you know, here. It goes on to say, from a teacher, I teach math and science. How can I integrate this into my teaching? And the answer is, you can use numbers and maps to look at the impacts of housing discrimination, low minimum wage, and the school to prison pipeline. You can ask your students how to think about ways to solve deep social problems. How can we reduce the number of losses to police violence? What are ways to end poverty? It's also an opportunity to introduce activism, privilege, and public policy. I mean, these are things that are actively being put out by the teaching and learning department of the Olympia School District for teachers to teach. So, you know, this isn't a secret, is what I'm saying.
It's baked in. And that, you know, it almost, so we can focus on the individual teachers and things that they might do. But when you realize that that's what they're being told and encouraged to do, it becomes a much bigger issue. And it really, I think, weakens any expectation that rogue teachers, quote unquote, would be held accountable, because they're not rogue teachers. That's kind of the takeaway. It's like, no, these aren't rogue teachers. These are teachers doing exactly what the district is encouraging them to do. One other question on that, Alicia. The two, Jennifer Knight and Karina Champion, two of the teachers we've highlighted the most out of the Olympia School District, they're also union representatives. So is there a concern amongst parents that might have hampered the accountability for them specifically?
Well, what I have heard from other staff, other teachers, that is that this becomes problematic, because if another teacher, say, has an issue with some of this, you then have to look at somebody like Karina Champion to represent you. And, you know, but this, it's unfortunate because, you know, I keep saying these types of things are further perpetuating the idea that I think is correct, that teachers' unions have been really taken over by activism. I personally don't believe that this represents all the teachers. I think a lot of the teachers don't even know what's going on at some of the higher levels of the union, but it's unfortunate, you know.
Well, what I'd like to see is a teacher, just for the fun of it, you know, go on some tirade against Democrats and talk about Donald Trump and all these conservative principles, and then see if Karina Champion is going to come to their defense, you know, when someone invariably complains about it, because I just don't think it would be treated in the same way. And neither of them are acceptable. But I mean, right. I just don't see them just being like, oh, yeah, you can talk about your love for Donald Trump in a sixth grade science class, like, no big deal.
Right.
Just one quick thing before we let you go. We obviously did the story on Karina Champion, and then going back to 2019, her bringing a dildo to a sex ed class that parents hadn't even been told about. You've been able to speak in your independent reporting to two or three students who were in that class. Did you learn anything from them that we hadn't known or hadn't been public?
Yeah, I had actually multiple parents, multiple staff members, and multiple students reach out to me, and I interviewed two of the students. And it went way beyond a classroom where an inappropriate sex lesson happened. The things that they told me are shocking. And some examples are, you know, she used her own stash of condoms and told the kids this is from when she was married to her husband. She had them draw pictures of penises and vaginas. She shared endlessly about her divorce and new LGBTQ relationships, her sexualities. She told the boys in the class that if they wake up with a, quote, BLNER, to just rub it out. She talked to the class about her period, how she hates Trump, white men, toxic masculinity, bringing her young son to school and having students babysit him. I mean, I can't make this stuff up, Brandy, and it's been corroborated by multiple people. She had a Vegas rule, which was what happens in this class stays in this class.
Okay. So you're saying multiple students who were in her class have confirmed these details to you?
Yes.
It's disgusting. Yes. How is that? In what environment would any parent defend that? Would any school defend that? And, you know, I saw the investigative report on the dildo class thing, and she's saying, well, I didn't bring it up. Some kid shouted it. I don't believe her for a second. She has a pattern of behavior. You look, take one look at her social media accounts. I believe every single thing that the kids have said. There's no reason for them to make it up. Some of this stuff, kids that age, I don't see how they would make it up. I don't see how it would come out of their mind. So that's wild. And I mean, please follow up with us, as I know that you have these connections with students and teachers, and we'd love to hear what else comes out of this. So, Alicia Perkins, we started the interview with me ruining your day, and we've ended the interview with you ruining my day. So,
can I just say one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of these parents are being told, well, you just need to sue the school district.
And
that may be true, but, you know, it is very concerning that we're at a point where a parent has to hire an attorney for potentially thousands of dollars to just get a school district to follow its own policies and laws. There should be checks and balances. Somebody else should be stepping in to say something is deeply wrong here. It should not be up to a parent to do this. I'm not saying they will not, but that is, it's hard to understand that that's the place that we're at.
Oh, I agree 100%, especially with 2081. And just really quickly on that, because we've actually heard from a couple parents who, you know, they're like, well, I'd love to sue, but I can't even find an attorney who will take a case, or, you know, has like, they, you know, that go against the teachers union or whatever it is. Have you heard that from parents as well, that they don't even have an attorney that they feel like they can turn to?
Well, many of the local attorneys, you know, have a conflict of interest. They may have students in the district themselves, so they don't want to end up suing a district. Many of the attorneys have been very clear that, you know, look, this isn't a money case. It's more of a crusade case, you know, getting a school district to abide by its own policies or follow the law. And it's unfortunate, because I would hope that some of the more nonprofits who are, you know, working to get some of this stuff corrected would step up.
Oh, 100%.
Deal with some of this.
You know, there are a ton of cause law firms out there. We have them on the show all the time. So if anybody is watching this segment and wants to take on a cause case that might not be a money case, you know, please.
They've got one.
You've got one?
No, they have. Oh. They would have one if they. No. Yes. They would. A cause case with an organization, they would definitely have that.
Okay. All right. So there's the call to action. So if anybody wants to step up to the plate, any group wants to step up to the plate and get in touch with us, we can put you in touch with Alicia. Alicia, thank you so much, as usual.
Thanks, Brandy.
All I can do not to drink cyanide every time Alicia's on the show and just be like, hang it up.
Wow.
And this is where we flash the suicide hotline number, which we'll add in post editing. I'm kidding, of course. But look, do you see what's happening here? There's some good, as tragic as all that is, there's some good things happening here. So what have we been seeing? And on this show is just a small taste of it. Parents speaking up. You have kids now speaking to Alicia, telling them what happened. We've received multiple emails from parents willing to speak up about Karina Champion or other issues they're having in the Olympia School District. And this stuff is not relegated to the Olympia School District. It's happening elsewhere as well. But you see what happens when there's one teacher willing to speak or one parent willing to speak. Then there's multiple parents willing to speak. We're trying to get some students on the record, et cetera, et cetera. And now what do they need? They need a law firm to take up the case. They need a lawyer who is willing to sue the Olympia School District or OSPI or both to try to make sure they're holding teachers accountable for their behavior, and that it's not enough for the school district, which is obviously ideologically driven, to say, nah, we're not going to do anything about that. No, there are rules on the books for a reason that teachers are supposed to abide by. We deserve to know that teachers who break those rules are actually facing consequences. So you've had parents who've done the hard work. You've had students who have done the hard work. We wouldn't even know about Karina Champion had a sixth grader not recorded her in class. So they're speaking up. Now we need an attorney or a law firm who's willing to take this across the finish line. And this is how we push for positive change in our schools. I just want to mention it quick because it's just full of good information like this. Alicia Perkins has a Substack. It's called OSD Rescue. If you're interested in reading, she puts out really good in-depth work with sources, with source documents, and all of that stuff. So please check out her Substack, OSD Rescue. All right, coming up next, we have the Linwood Police Chief joining us after that horrible murder of a 13-year-old girl at the Alderwood Mall. And the chief has some real frustrations with challenges they face because of laws that have been passed in this state that make it difficult to investigate crimes involving juvenile offenders. That's next. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Every one of us needs insurance. Can't get around it, unfortunately. But the question is, are you handling your insurance needs on your own, or are you going through a local trusted insurance broker? First Mark Insurance has been in this business for a long time. What I love about the First Mark Challenge, it's free, but what they're going to do is they're going to assess your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs, and then they're going to go out and they're going to shop their carriers. They have all these carriers at their disposal to try to get you what you need at the best price. And I'm telling you, man, what they went through with me and with Mike and I, it baffled us, I think. It was a learning experience how much there is involved in getting the right insurance and in making sure you're not paying for insurance that you don't even need. So we ended up becoming members of the First Mark family because they were able to get us better insurance for the same rate. And then the Undivided Podcast is now insured through First Mark. Nicole has her insurance through First Mark. It's because their service is superior and it takes so much worry off your plate, wondering, do I have the insurance I need and am I getting the best price or am I just paying what they tell me to pay because I don't have the time or energy to look into the insurance options on my own. So take the First Mark Challenge today. Join a growing number of Undivided viewers and listeners who have become members of the First Mark family as well. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right. So over the holiday week, happened the day before the 4th of July. We talked about it on the show yesterday. A 13-year-old named Jada was shot and killed while at the mall, the Alderwood Mall in Linwood with friends. What we know about this is still coming into focus. There were two groups of young men at the mall that got into a verbal altercation. One of them, a 16-year-old, allegedly pulled out a gun. All happened really quickly. Fired the gun, ended up hitting and killing 13-year-old Jada Woods Johnson, who was doing nothing wrong, wasn't involved in this whatsoever, and has now lost her life doing something that every teenage girl in this country does, go to the mall with her friends. Just horrible stuff. But now, you know, there's been a lot of frustrations in the days after the fact about, you know, what the justice system does and does not do with juvenile offenders. I mean, this 16-year-old was out like that. $500,000 bail for someone who brought a gun to a mall and killed an innocent girl is just insane. Before the family even had time to realize what happened, he was back home with his family. Just horrible stuff. But there was also, and continues to be, another challenge behind the scenes that is true with all juvenile offenders in the state of Washington. It is nearly impossible for police to interview them. So there's still so much confusion around what happened at Alderwood Mall that the police in Linwood are trying to sort through. You know, what was the dispute about? You know, we don't know for sure whether they've recovered the handgun that was used. They're being a little bit coy about that. And so there's some information that they need to help keep the public safe and to try to help make sure that there's no one else who needs to be arrested. Right now, there's just one 16-year-old who's been arrested, but this was a fight between two groups. So are there other individuals who are culpable? But here's the thing. Remember in 2021, when we were coming off this year of social justice and racial justice reckoning and George Floyd, the legislature in Olympia, they passed all these anti-police bills. The pursuit bill got a lot of attention, but another thing that happened that year in that package was they passed a bill that said you cannot interview juvenile offenders. I just pulled up an old article from the Yakima Herald. New Washington law requires kids to talk to attorneys before police can question them. So this is anyone under the age of 18. It's not enough to just say, okay, you have your Miranda rights and you can request an attorney be present. This tells police you cannot interview. You cannot interview a juvenile offender, no matter how serious the crime, until they have spoken to an attorney, and you have to go out and make sure that they have an attorney. So they can't even waive, even a 17-year-old who's committed a very serious adult-level crime, they can't even knowingly waive their right to have an attorney present to be able to talk to law enforcement. So the Linwood Police Chief, Cole Langdon, joined us to talk about the real frustrations over that particular law and the impact it's having on their ability to solve crimes and investigate crimes involving juvenile offenders, but also some frustrating details of this case.
We're trying to get the full story here. But again, when we're talking about dealing with juvenile suspects, we're unable to interview them. So once they're placed into custody, we are not able to, by law, interview them any further. And people might say, well, of course you can. Well, no, you have to actually reach out to their attorney, or you have to obtain an attorney for them. The attorney then at that point would, as any attorney would say, you can no longer speak with them. But a lot of this information, trying to figure out what led up to this, where key items of evidence might be, all the events, just really trying to build the story so we can better understand this. We're really cut off from being able to do that.
Talk specifically about, you know, how that has changed. You've been with Linwood PD, you were telling me, for almost 3 decades. So how has that changed when interviewing juvenile offenders, you know, from when you started in your career to now?
Sure. I mean, we've always, been required to advise people of their rights if they are in custody for a suspected crime. They are not free to leave, or they feel as though they might not be free to leave. We are on the side of caution of advising them of their rights. With juveniles, we'll go further. We'll advise them that there are additional juvenile warnings that we used to be able to give to just let them know and kind of further clarify what was at stake potentially with them answering questions as they spoke with the police. We are very careful. We're very mindful of that. And our argument would be that rather than having this legislation, we continue to allow the courts to be the appropriate venue to determine whether a statement should be allowed or admissible in court or not. And so it's been a bit of a change where, let's say you had a case where you have an outstanding firearm, you have an outstanding weapon, where there's a real public safety interest. Our ability to interview on that and to gather that information, that would not meet the threshold. There are some thresholds within the law that allow for a potential active shooter or an event that might break out. I mean, but we're talking real extreme sets of circumstances where there's an imminent threat to the community where something is about to take place. We can then dive in and begin questioning. But let's say you have something where you can't find that firearm. You can't find a knife. And it might be out in the community somewhere. Maybe it's been thrown into a park. Maybe it's been thrown into a garbage can where it could be found by somebody else. We're not able to ask questions or determine where those items are. So you start talking about common sense, how those get suppressed when they get into court later on. And the courts have the ability to suppress certain statements and allow other statements in. And it's a fairly nuanced dance that's played by the prosecutors, by defense attorneys, and all arbitrated by the courts, you know, by the judges. So this new process has now been pushed down to out into the field, where we're having to navigate this. And really, what it has resulted in is an inability to question juveniles. And so the problem I have is that there are times where juveniles are doing very adult type crimes that are very, very dangerous, and to not have the ability to do that, to look into some of these things and to dig further so that we can really understand what's going on, what happened, and determine if there are any future threats to the community or any present threats to the community. We've largely been stifled in our ability to do that.
Yeah, you pointed out exactly what I would point out is, like, okay, I get it. And I think there's some arguments to be made about, as you said before, you guys used to also still go above and beyond your Miranda rights when it comes to juveniles to make sure that they understood fully what was going on. But you know, you're committing adult sized crimes and you're not getting adult treatment. And, you know, that is something that I think we need to have a conversation about. So there's also this issue of bail that came up. I know that they're separate. I know that you're not the judge, jury and executioner at the police department, but you've been doing this for 30 years. Is $500,000 bail, do you believe, appropriate in a case with these circumstances?
How bail is set, I'm really going to defer back to the judges on that. I mean, the $500,000 bail, I think it's surprising that somebody could come up with that amount right away. So I think what likely would be a reasonable bail amount for a horrific crime. I'm not in any way minimizing the crime. I would defer back to the judge on that because they are supposed to take into account all the risk factors and the likelihood of this person further offending and or showing up to court. And so the information that was presented to them at that time, the judge made the call that they made. We were surprised that they were able to come up with that bail amount fairly quickly. And that just is what it is. So,
I mean, Jada's family's pretty pissed off about it. Do you blame them?
They are devastated. And you know, I met with them earlier today, and the way our systems are set up, there is nothing out there within our criminal justice system that will fill the void that's left by their beautiful daughter being taken away from them, who did absolutely nothing wrong. And I think many people who work in the criminal justice system know that. It's not a perfect system. It's going to fall short in providing that true justice. Yeah, I'm hoping that they can temper their expectations, and I'm hoping that they are sealing themselves for what's in front of them as they go through this and they try to make sense of what happened with their daughter, who, again, was doing nothing wrong, not engaged in high-risk behavior, did just being a young kid, enjoying the ball, and what this looks like. There's no way to right this wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah. You can try. I mean, the justice system needs to try. And I think, you know, it's almost horrifying to even talk about the fact that they should already set their expectations low in a sense. But, you know, there's a lot going on with juvenile crime. I mean, in Lynnwood, have you guys seen an uptick, a noticeable uptick at all in juvenile crime? Can you articulate that for me?
Absolutely. I can't give you the stats, but I can tell you we have seen an uptick. I can get the stats later on. But what we've seen is an increased level of brazenness. We're seeing more firearms out here. We've had an encounter with our officers recently, an officer-involved shooting where we believe the suspects were juveniles. And we're still working through that case right now. Can't question the juveniles. So, yeah.
What do you think it is, Chief? What do you think is, because we're not talking about like joyriding and things, you know, we all did when we were young. We're talking about serious violent crime. What's going on with kids?
I think there's a bit of a brokenness. I think we need to get back to common sense approaches of, you know, I recognize that a young man, a juvenile's brain is not fully formed and they're going to make decisions. There's going to be impulse issues. That doesn't mean we have every teenager out there running around with a firearm in their waistband that is stealing a car and committing robberies, robbing other kids. There are kids that are operating on the outer fringes, and I'm all about intervention. I'm all about redemption, but I think there needs to be a well-defined, probably court-ordered intervention type process. If that's mentorship for them, if that's education, if that's a timeout where we get them to a spot where we can get them away from whatever bad situation they are, but some sort of robust intervention where we can get these kids on the right track before they graduate to actually taking someone's life. Because at that point, it's a completely different spot that we're in now. And we have a lost life, and we have another person's, a young person's life who is now changed forever. I think it's okay to have consequences, and it's okay to have consequences for children and to instill that. I was talking with a friend the other day, and he said, you know, you could tell a third grader, you could ask a third grader, do you think it's okay to bring a gun to the mall? And third graders are probably going to say, hey, probably shouldn't bring the gun to the mall. So to give a 16-year-old, let them off the hook with, well, they just don't know any better because their brains aren't fully formed, I think is not going all the way through with where we need to be as a society of, okay, while that might be the case, what can we do to put structures and or systems and or off-ramps in place so we can equip these young men and young women with a path forward. So how can we harness the energy? How can we harness that recklessness, that dangerous behavior, and get them on a different track? So there is a better path, and there is a great story that we can tell of redemption later on, as opposed to a story that we're now talking about of heartbreak and a lost life that will never come back. So I think I'm hoping that we get back to just like everything right now, rather than the polarity of it's all this or all that. There's a lot of room in the middle there to figure out a path forward that probably makes sense, that could be a little more nuanced, and we can do better in serving our youth and provide some structure. You know, I coached little league football and high school football for years, and I can tell you young men crave structure.
I'd rather have them have structure on a football field than structure in a jail cell for the rest of their lives. That's for sure. So I just want to end with this because it came up, you know, just after this shooting happened, and it just seems relevant to the issue we're talking about. The Department of Children, Youth and Families put out a statement saying that they will not be taking any new bookings into either of the juvenile detention facilities in the state until further notice. I guess, is there any sort of trickle down impact of that you can foresee?
Yeah, well, I can tell you that if they're going to one of those two institutions, they're not going there for stealing a six pack of beer or going for a joyride in a car. They have graduated to very dangerous behavior where our justice system, especially for juveniles, is extremely reticent to lock kids up, and rightfully so. I mean, to remove them from whatever their environment is and to put them into a secure facility, that's something that has to be weighed heavily and has to be decided upon, not quickly. So with that, though, to say that we're just shutting it off, the people that are graduating to those are engaged in very violent behavior usually. And so I am concerned about the safety implications for our community.
Well, what DCYF says, and they put this bombshell out, you know, holiday weekend, and then they said, we'll have more details later. And I'm thinking, we need more details now. What my understanding is that these juveniles, if they're, for instance, sentenced or awaiting sentencing, that they would remain in county facilities. I guess, is there a thought that county facilities are okay with that? I mean, you know, what's happening in King and Snohomish counties? Are they going to be okay to pick up the burden of that?
I'd have to defer to my peers on that. I know that we have a great relationship with Snohomish County's juvenile detention facility. They're great up there. They're about creating a great environment, a healing environment for these kids. So it might very well be that they can hold that, and they can kind of be that holding ground or that purgatory of sorts until they figure out a path moving forward at these longer term facilities. But yeah, the short notice caught us off guard as well. Now, again, for us, we are talking about things that are downstream. We're talking about people that have now gone through a court process and it's fully adjudicated. And now they're at a spot of let's send somebody off to a place so we can have them serve the time that they need to serve. So, downstream, what that looks like. I mean, I think there's further conversations to have. And we were very early. Like you said, this was just right before the weekend that we heard about all this. So.
Yeah. I mean, I just have at this point, I'm with the public safety stuff being so nonsensical. Sometimes I'm at like these conspiratorial levels where I'm like, they're not going to take new bookings. And so then they're going to give them shorter sentences because they're going to argue that there's no place for them. And so I just like go down this rabbit hole of concerns about it. Chief, anything else you need from the public right now, imminently on Jada's case?
No, I think it's important for people to be thinking deeply and considering all sides on these conversations that really do have a public safety impact for all of our communities. And so, these are complex issues, but I also think there are common sense approaches that we can find to make things better. And I look forward to that. And my only hope, and again, I'm still heartbroken by what happened to Jada. My hope, and I've already started to get some emails from some of our leaders in the area, that maybe this spurs some further conversations about what can we be doing better. And so I remain hopeful. We have a lot of bright people in the justice system. We have a lot of bright people. I don't share the view that there's conspiracies out there. I think sometimes we just have these big systems that are disparate and aren't maybe communicating as well as they should. And so I think as we come together, this could spur some fruitful conversations. And so I just would ask people to be understanding that a lot of these gray complex issues require us all to sit there and think and come together at the table to find solutions rather than being in all this or in all that sort of deal. So people just considering it and considering all sides and thinking critically about the issues is, I guess, what I would ask. Yep. As I would ask of my kids.
Thinking is good. We also need action, for sure. Well, beyond the point, you leave the conspiracies to me, okay? I'll handle the conspiracies. All right, Chief. Well, again, I'm so sorry for what's happened up there and just devastated. I know, you know, how hard that is for law enforcement as well with kids, particularly to come on a scene like that and Jada's family. I mean, it was heartbroken for her. So thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
That is Lynnwood Police Chief Cole Langdon on the shooting at Alderwood Mall that claimed the life of a 13-year-old girl. Jada is just horrifying. So here, a couple things, you know, what I would just say. I am a constitutionalist through and through. You have a constitutional right to bail. We talked about on the show yesterday. I never want to be in a situation where the government can just lock you up before, you know, you've been proven guilty in a court of law. So, you know, the $500,000, I still think it's terribly low considering, you know, the disregard you have to show for human life to fire a gun in a crowded mall. Call me crazy. On the issue of interviewing juvenile offenders, I do agree that there should be special care in interrogating juveniles. You want those interrogations to stand up in court. And that's what the chief is saying is, you know, the court is already the venue to decide whether someone's constitutional rights were violated. So we always want to go about it in a constitutional way. Otherwise, it's not going to be admissible in court. And then what good does it do us? No good at all. And so I also understand, like, hey, you've got a 14-year-old suspect. You know, are they going to fully grasp what it means, like the ability to have an attorney and their rights and all of that stuff? So I'm really on the fence about the law that mandates that you have to proactively make sure an attorney is there, that they can't, that a child can't waive that right. But then when you get into some of these gangbangers, 17 years old, and they're committing very adult crimes and they're taking other people's lives, to me, it's like, you did the adult crime, like, you know, you're responsible for your actions enough to know, you know, what, that you have the right to have an attorney present. And for instance, in this case, if they're looking for the gun, like, oh, is there a gun out in the community and we need to find it before someone uses it to hurt someone else? They can't just be like, where's the gun? You know, they got to wait, they got to call an attorney, they got to wait till the attorney comes there. And so there's some issues there, I think, that can be sorted out. And just one other thing I want to say. I agree with the chief that we need to sit down and have adult common sense conversations. But I don't want to have this, keep having the same stupid conversations for 20 years where we all know what the issue is. We all know what we need to do, but we just don't do it. I mean, nobody disagrees that, like, we need to make sure that we are intervening early on, especially with young men, to keep them on a better path, you know, in school, in work, and all of this stuff. Okay, well, we've been saying that for 20 years, probably longer than that, 50 years. I mean, I can only speak to when I've been alive. And still, well, that's not happening, clearly. You still have young men going into the gang life as opposed to, you know, focusing on school and an education, yet we've been saying the same freaking stuff, no-brainer stuff for years and years and years. So at some point, like, okay, well, are you going to do it or not? And if you're not going to do it, I guess we just have to throw them in jail. I guess that's it. If you're not going to put meaningful efforts in place to try to get these young people on a better path in life, then I guess we just have to throw them in jail. Because, you know, and you might think, what is a better path, right? There have to be consequences in school. There have to be consequences built in at every stage before they commit a heinous crime like murdering a 13-year-old girl at a mall. And what do we have? We just talked about our education system. They're talking about politics and social issues. If you're not white, they're basically saying, well, the world is meant to hold you down. We've discussed this a million times on the show. Oh, the world is out to get you. You can't do anything with your life. And so then, of course, they're like, well, I'm going to just rob, cheat, and steal my way through life because I've been told by adults and by Jay Inslee and all these people that, you know, the system is designed to hold me down. That nonsense has to end. They have to know that there's a future out there for them if they're willing to work for it. And along the way, when they fall short, there are consequences for falling short. Simple. This is simple stuff. And unfortunately, a lot of it does come down to the quality of their parents. I don't want the government interfering needlessly in the home. You can't force a parent to be a good parent. You just can't. You can't force a parent to be present. You can't force a parent to care where their kids are at midnight. And then that leaves those kids in a situation where they have to make a decision for themselves. What kind of life am I going to lead? And so there's always going to be kids who stray. And then the system has to deal with them after the fact. All right. We will get to a double dose of unbelievable coming up next. First, if you are trying to buy or sell a home, I suggest reaching out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. We love Wes because, you know, he's obviously a sponsor on the show, but he's been showing up to some of our events and came to our 2066 signing in Bellevue. And I just think that's so cool to have sponsors on the show that agree with us on so many things, but I digress. So we've had a few undivided viewers who have reached out to Wes Jones when they're looking to sell their home. Bryce and Carla wanted to sell their home in Bellevue. We're a little bit concerned about the state of the market. When they sold in January, they were trying to retire to Florida, so they reached out to Wes Jones and were very happy with the results.
He was extraordinarily detailed, and he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for, and most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't. You know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us, said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point, and you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that. So his knowledge of the market and his professionalism and his attention to detail is all that made the difference to us.
Yeah, they were able to sell their home in Bellevue in 7 days for over list price and retire to sunny Florida. And we're just so happy with their experience with Wes Jones. So visit sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Bob Ferguson gets a Seattle Times endorsement. So that's good for his campaign. Let's see what kind of, you know, he's really, really proud of his record, right? So let's see what kind of stuff he's bragging about on social media today in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. Fresh off the Seattle Times endorsement, Bob Ferguson, I'm sure, is trying to prove that he's worthy of it, bragging about his accomplishments as he runs for governor. Let's see here on X. Today I announced the resolution of our case against chicken price fixing. We recovered $37.7 million from corporations. We already sent $30 million directly to Washingtonians. These corporations signed legally enforceable documents to not engage in price fixing. As governor, I will continue to fight for affordability by combating price fixing and monopolies. He's bragging about the chicken checks. That's what he's got. He is bragging about one of the most embarrassing failures in his time as attorney general in his bid to be governor. That's what he's got.
I really like the thumbs up right in front of the dollar store.
Yeah. He's over at the dollar
because
store.
Because that's where we all have to shop now. Yeah. Thanks to you.
I didn't even notice that. The picture he is. Wait, did you take that off his social? Is that
that's
from his social
with the
media?
Post, yeah.
Oh, he looks like he's in a parade, but he's like, uh-huh. Oh, we're all making you dollar store poor. Hey, don't knock the dollar store, though.
Oh, I love the poor dollar store. Isn't dollar anymore.
No. Well, there's some things you can get for a buck, but.
Not really anymore. They've all gone up to like $119, I think.
No, I got a couple of bags there. There's a dollar store right next to the Starbucks next to my yoga studio. I got a couple little present bags in there.
Okay.
Anyway,
there's a few.
I digress. Bob Ferguson has the audacity to celebrate among his many accomplishments his chicken check debacle. I don't have to remind you, I don't think, about how disastrous that was. He says we sent $30 million in checks to Washingtonians. Yeah, Bob, how many of them were alive? How many of those checks went to people who were still living and breathing? How many of those checks went to people who actually qualified for those checks? How many of those checks went to people who still lived at the address where you sent the checks? I mean, the questions go on and on. How many of those checks went to people who actually bought canned chicken and tuna? We know the answer is not very many. So all you succeeded in doing is pushing out $30 million in checks to people who didn't actually use chicken or tuna or buy chicken or tuna or who weren't actually alive. So if that's more of what we're going to get when you're governor, that's not going to be very good. Nicole and I were saying, though, we love this graphic we use of the chicken with the checks.
I do.
So we want to frame the picture of the chicken.
It's got a mallet.
And then, we took it off like stock images, and technically it's a chicken acting as a judge, which I don't know why somebody made a stock image like that, but we cut the mallet out. So what we want to do, and we need your help with, is we want to frame a picture of the chicken, but then we want to frame a chicken check with a chicken. Mm-hmm. So if you could help us by, I don't know, mailing us a chicken check you didn't cash, we want to frame the chicken check with a chicken. So help us out with that. All right, let's get to a double dose of unbelievable, shall we? Boop, remember we talked about Governor Jansley's right-of-way initiative where he was going to clear encampments off state freeways and such, and it cost, we did the math on it, and it cost like $1 million per homeless person to clear them from the freeway and then have them exit homelessness. It was like $1 million per person. I went down to Olympia. I tried to question lawmakers about it. And they're like, well, we can't put a price on human life. It's like, no, sky's the limit. And it's like, no, I'm not saying you put a price on human life, but you have to be accountable for government spending. And I think everyone agrees that you should be able to help a lot more than one person, many more than one person's, with $1 million. So that was the point we were making. Well, we have yet another example of a government program where the spending was just as egregious. According to the Center Square, a state-sponsored program spent $1 million to get 37 disadvantaged people driver's license. Carry the two, carry the... That's $27,000 per person. $1 million to get 37 disadvantaged people driver's licenses. It says a program set up in King County through the State Department of Licensing and funded by the state legislature has spent nearly $1 million teaching disadvantaged women to drive, with just 37 women actually obtaining their license in a 5-month period. King County contracts with Mujer al Volante. Women, what is, Nicole, can you Google translate that? I know that's woman to... Volante, is that like to move? Women to move?
I'll check into it.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. A nonprofit organization in Seattle that offers support services to refugee and immigrant women. In 2022, the legislature gave DOL $350,000 to also contract with a nonprofit, with an additional $2 million appropriated earlier this year in the state transportation budget. The Driver's License Assistance Program, Taking the Steering Wheel of My Life. What a dumb... The program's called Taking the Steering Wheel of My Life. Provides qualifying applicants assistance towards obtaining a driver's license. To qualify, a person must be a woman or non-binary, an immigrant, asylee, or refugee, and be classified as low income. So a man could do it and just say, I'm non-binary? Whatever. Use the system that you've got. Since the program started in December, there have been 522 individuals who have gone through the program. However, just 37 of them have successfully passed the written and driven exams and driving exams. In January, there were 101 participants, and only one of them obtained a license. In April, there were 132 participants, 13 of which got their license. You guys, $27,000 per person to get a driver's license. $27,000. Per person to help women who are low income, asylees or refugees or immigrants to get a driver's license.
Brave lady, by the way.
That means brave lady. Mujer al Volante. Brave lady. This is an example of a couple things. It's DEI gone wrong. The only reason, so DEI programs are completely immune from any sort of accountability. They just are. We've learned that. We saw that in the summer of 2020, where they decided to dole out all these government contracts to BIPOC groups with zero accountability, like when Mayor Jenny Durkan appointed the street czar, and he didn't do anything, and so they just quietly didn't renew his contract. And that was like almost $1 million down the drain. They were literally thinking about handing over the East Police Precinct to a BIPOC group just to make the whole situation go away, which wouldn't have worked, obviously. And then you look at the... what the heck is the Housing Justice Project, right? Any sort of justice-related, BIPOC-related, DEI. I mean, they're writing, Justice Project is writing $52,000 checks to a guy who is living in a nice house in Bellevue and just decides not to pay rent for 2 years and taxpayers have to foot the bill. So if it's DEI, just it de facto will never be audited. They will never look into it. If it's supposed to help disadvantaged people, there's no waste in that. We can't waste money. Just like I go back to the right-of-way initiative, where any sane, breathing person knows that $1 million per person per exit from homelessness is far too much. There's no excuse for it. It's absolute government corruption and waste. But when I ask about it, it's like, are you trying to put a price on a human life, Brandy? Like, no, I'm trying to do my job and hold the government accountable, and credit to the Center Square for looking into this. I mean, first of all, it can't be that good of a program. Where are they sending these people to get the training and the studying they need to get a driver's license, when you have, in 522 individuals, only 37 of them have got a driver's license? In January, 101 participants, and only one was able to get their license.
Don't we want people taking the bus anyway?
That is a good point, too.
What the heck?
Why is King County spending $1 million, $27,000 per person to get people driver's licenses when you just want them taking the bus? Nicole, great job.
Right.
That is really smart.
I mean, I saw the new Rick Steves commercial.
Oh, God.
Promoting transit.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, we're spending money there.
If we got to spend $27,000 to get somebody a driver's license, I'd rather have them ride public transit as well. It's wild. Maybe they shouldn't be driving if that's the price. Like, that's how much
safety issue.
That's how much it takes to try to get them to pass. But that also shows you, right, that they have the assistance program taking the steering wheel of my life, right, mm-hmm. where they have a government contractor. So if you had in any private entity, right, where you were contracting with them for an outcome, like get these people driver's licenses, mm-hmm. and they had 101 people in there and only one of them got a driver's license. If this was a private enterprise, you'd be like, well, clearly this isn't working. That's like, I'd like contact the FBI for fraud.
Great.
Like, you must not be capable of teaching people how to drive mm-hmm. if you're only getting one out of 101 in the month of January. So there's the issue there of, again, anything BIPOC related, anything immigrant, refugee related, anything DEI related. Mm-hmm. Not only is there no oversight or accountability, there isn't any care or concern whether the program is doing what the program is designed to do. Like, are there any outcomes? Is it actually helping? You know, so to put it more simplistically, like, they want to look like they're helping people of color, but they don't care if they're actually helping people of color.
Well, and I mean, it doesn't even make sense. So if you can't pay for, I mean, driver's education really isn't that expensive.
It's not $27,000.
But I mean, it might be a couple hundred. But you're also going to have to, if you get your driver's license, you have to buy a car. You have to maintain the car. You have to pay for insurance monthly.
Very true.
If you can't pay $200 to get your license, how are you going to pay $200 next month for the insurance?
Nicole.
I don't.
That's such a good question.
This whole program doesn't make sense to me.
We need to follow up, because those are really good questions. Are they also offering that assistance? Because this is saying they have to be low income. Mm-hmm. So we're going to help you get your driver's license and go through whatever tests.
They might not be working at all.
Right. So if that's the case, as Nicole properly states, how do you expect them to have a car, to be able to drive, to afford, in Jay Inslee's Washington, mm-hmm. under the Climate Commitment Act, to be able to put gas in the car, to be able to drive? So this is a disaster.
Nothing makes sense about this.
Nicole, gosh, you're so good.
Oh, thanks.
So many good questions. We're going to follow up on this, but absolutely ridiculous. $27,000 per person to get them a driver's license, and about 500 people who went through the program and couldn't even obtain their driver's license. Sounds like a failure to me. All right, we're going to skip national news today, except to say a lot of feedback on my announcement that I will be voting for Donald Trump.
Oh.
A lot of feedback.
I might not be surprised.
The left-wing bloggers in Seattle were like, we knew she was mega Trump all along. And it's like, well, I wasn't mega Trump ever, really. I've been kind of harsh on him for 6-7 years. But what I said is, to be clear, that I will vote for him if the options are Biden and Trump. If the options are someone else in Trump, I'll reassess. Maybe there's some sleeper person, or maybe Trump's in prison and it's not even Trump. We don't even know. But yeah, if those are the options, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. And a bunch of people online were asking, why not RFK Jr., since he's an independent and I consider myself an independent? The answer is simple. He started the race as a Democrat, and I like that he switched to independent. I think that's great. I think more people need to run as independents, but I don't know what I'm getting from him. He's been kind of all over the place. There's a lot of uncertainty there. We're in a period where I need some certainty, and I have a few certainties about Donald Trump. He'll address the situation at the southern border. He'll work toward energy independence. And I think through strength, he'll be much better suited to try to deal with what's happening in Israel and in Ukraine. So those are some certainties I have. With RFK Jr., I'm not really sure what.
And again,
it's like all over the place.
We don't encourage just voting for your party,
right?
Regardless of who or what they say or do or whatever. No, you have to research your people and know what you're voting for.
Right.
Know what they're going to do.
Yeah. And I this doesn't mean I like Republicans either. I've said I'm, especially right now, they're kind of on my S list in Washington state, at least. But I'm not a Republican.
The party people, not Republicans in general.
Yeah. No, sorry. The Washington state Republican Party. But both the parties are on my S list. I don't like the party system. Like I said, they don't work for you. They don't care about you. They don't care about the people. They care about the party and winning for the party and raising money. Like, that's what you have to realize. You can love some Republican candidates. You can love some Democratic candidates. But that's what you, and I think that most of you do that. You think independently. And you're not just going to de facto vote for someone because of the letter next to your name. I mean, look at Dave Riker. There are some Republicans who are saying, he's a Republican, but he did this, this, and this, and I don't like it. So he's not Republican enough for me. That's your choice. Do what you want to do. So I'm not going to vote for RFK just because he's running as an independent, and I like the idea of more people being independents. So the left-wing bloggers, we knew she was MAGA. I didn't even know I was MAGA. I mean, y'all, I always want to make America great. I think it's been great. I think it could be better. So,
I don't think it's a slam anymore. I think we're over
it. I just don't care. I just don't care. The thing, and I said on the show yesterday, both parties are so morally bankrupt that you don't have the right to, like, say I'm morally bankrupt because I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. Because both the parties are exceedingly morally bankrupt and morally inconsistent. And so it's lost its meaning. It's lost its meaning.
I do think the Republicans in our state need to figure out how to raise more money because they're putting their – it seems like they've put their weight behind candidates that aren't getting money. And – I mean, I see a Ferguson ad every ad that I see is like a Ferguson
and
ad.
And I cannot stomach like that ad of
Netflix
his anymore.
On all of the streaming platforms, it's all Ferguson ads.
The other day, I settled in, super tired, settled in to relax, got my little blanket. I was in the AC, lucky up with me, remote, turn it on. Bob Ferguson's face. I was like, way to ruin my whole evening.
That's why we pay for streaming, so we don't have to watch these commercials.
Nope, still do. Ugh. Anyway, so that's the reason. That's the reason I'm not inclined to vote for RFK Jr. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to get to your questions and comments coming up next. First, Zach Abraham and our friends at Bulwark Capital are going to be having another one of their free Know Your Risk webinars. Look, you're saving for retirement. There's a couple issues at play. You want to make sure you don't expose your retirement to unnecessary risk. Risk is always part of it, right? But with everything going on, the election coming up, global unrest, crazy market volatility, you don't need to expose it to more risk than necessary. And also, there's the added risk of inflation. You're saving for your retirement. You have a retirement in mind that you'd like to have, but with this inflationary environment, is the amount you saved going to go far enough? So that's what the webinar on January 25th, or not January, wow, it's July, here I am. You know, I want to be cold, that's it. Like, I'm thinking January thoughts right now. On July 25th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, it's totally free. You can watch it passively and just soak in the knowledge if you want. But they're going to have a webinar about inflation. They call it the silent portfolio killer for obvious reasons. So you can sign up right now. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. I feel like my announcer voice is getting very sharp and crisp. And maybe I should, I don't know.
It wasn't. I think it's always been sharp and crisp.
Thank you. I feel like I should you know, do some voice jobs where I just do the fine print reading.
Yeah.
You know? They wouldn't even have to speed me up. I think
AI
I could do it really
fast. AI
is
stealing it from you.
Yeah, that's lame. Okay. All right, Matthew Cook, Brandy and Nicole, what's your favorite hot weather song? I don't know. You and Dory used to do this all the time during hot weather.
I think that's why Matt put it in there. But yeah. So we used to do a summer driving song.
What's your summer driving song?
I would say mine's, I think I've still got to go back to my classics, which are Springsteen by Eric Church. And maybe Summer of 69. I mean, it's a classic.
Whenever I think of fun summer songs, people are going to be like, weird, that's weird, Brandy. But I think of being out on the boat with my friends in Minnesota.
Okay.
Like in the summers when we were seniors, and we would blast Buck Cherry's crazy bitch. Hey. Yeah, but it's like vulgar, uh-huh. right? But that's what we would blast out on the boat. So that's like the first thing that comes to my mind. I haven't listened to it in a while, though. Yeah.
Well, maybe you will today.
You guys let us
know. We can't play songs because we would get everything pulled.
So. We don't want copyright issues. On the heat, Steve S., if you shut off your AC at home and leave and then come back, do you know how hard your AC has to work playing catch up? I doubt that you're saving much. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Just trying to like get the space cooled again. Todd Welch, go to the library to cool off. Increases the door count, and then the library gets more tax dollars. Who's working together? Interesting. Mm. Is that true that they get money based on how many people come in?
It makes sense.
I had never heard that. I don't know if that's true.
Scanner, and I'm sure they click your.
Well, I mean, if you like, yeah, if you maybe you go and you're like, you know, oh, I'm at the library, I might as well check out some books or whatever it is. Bryce Ancheta, but please go buy an electric vehicle and don't drive it because you can't charge it during a flex event. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's also dangerous. I mean, when you have your system, you're saying is so taxed that there might be outages, right? Yet you want to take away natural gas as an option. Well, when you are poor and you're already like trying to stay cool in any way you can, and then there's a power outage because the system isn't reliable, like you're talking about potentially killing people. So you're okay with people dying in severe weather as long as Governor Jay Inslee can say we ban natural gas? It's kind of horrible. Yeah. Kenneth Hummel, so now that Jay has wrecked the state, he's going to leave and maybe try to wreck another one? Yeah, this is a rumor. We have not confirmed the rumor, but this news outlet in Idaho, it's a conservative news outlet, is saying that Jay Inslee has like got some property in Idaho. He might be retiring out there.
I'm not convinced he's retiring. I'm curious what he's gonna
let's hope
do
he does.
Next, but I'm sure it's.
I'm sorry, that's I what know.
This has all been a big job application,
right? But it's also like, so you ruined our state, and then you're gonna leave it? No, you should have to. If you serve as governor, there should be a law that you have to retire in Washington State.
Yep, you must pay taxes in your own state.
Maybe he's gonna go there.
The taxes that you arranged.
And then to avoid capital gains mm-hmm. or something. I just, you know, anyway. There's a whole scandal, I'm sure. On the Olympia School District, Julie Hafen, more Alicias, please stand up and speak out. It's time to unite against the insanity. Bring back common sense insanity. 100%. We love Alicia. And Alicia has, you know, like I said, her willingness to speak out has led to other parents in Olympia speaking out. And that's when you get the ball rolling. Kathy Carr's comment, holy crap. Yeah,
that was brandy.
I was just like, I cannot believe that this person is still an educator.
Who would say that in front of, I mean, that takes a really cuckoo human to just go into a class of sixth graders and say all of those things.
And pull out a dildo.
If you're comfortable with that, something's wrong with you.
I agree. And look, allegedly, you know, this is, but why are these kids just graduated, because remember, this was 2019. What motive would they have to make up these things that they were taught? Like multiple students independently. So you, like people who would deny it would say, okay, those students colluded behind the scenes, like just to, I don't know, like ruin their seventh grade teacher's life after they graduated from high school and then go tell Alicia and expose themselves. No, they're telling the truth, okay?
And they're not just saying this as, oh, here's another story, it's really funny. No, some of them are still dealing with some of the things.
I don't want to share too much.
No, I'm not. But I'm just saying this. Some of them are still dealing with mentally the things that they learned and dealt with in her class, and some of the reaction from her because they said that if they spoke back or whatever, if she didn't like them, like they were bullied.
Yeah, we're trying to get them to speak, and they went through some stuff over this, and so they're like horrified by it. It's not something they're making up.
No.
These are
some of them are adults now. They're not even in school anymore. And they're all saying like, this needs to stop because I don't want this to happen to another child. Right.
And hey, Karina Champion, you are more than welcome to come on the Undivided podcast. If you say that they're not telling the truth, we would love to have you on. Get in touch.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear back from her, by the way?
No.
Are you sure? Check your junk box, or the spam. I'm sure it wound up there. Captain Cranky Pants, I really encourage everyone to read the Anti-Communist Manifesto by Jesse Kelly. Jeff said, not to be the pessimist here, but how do you ensure that the case isn't brought in front of one of our many activist judges? You can't.
Nope.
And if you lose it, all you can do is keep appealing and appealing till you get to a court that isn't bought, because we have a lot of issues here. Country guy, the school district has unlimited resources to defend itself. We, the taxpayers, pay for their defense. And I get that. Like, you never, you know, we're going through our own public records case. And there's always this element of, well, if we win it, then, you know, it's tax money. But that's the unfortunately the only avenue to try to hold the government accountable and put on the record that they did something wrong. So you just have no choice. And it sucks that it's tax money, but hopefully it changes their behavior. And then they don't have instances of this happening down the road. And
hopefully, I mean, I'd rather have it go to that than sparkly dildos.
True.
For the next
class. And honestly, I'd rather have like Alicia Perkins and a bunch of parents with that tax money than the Olympia School District or frankly, the Democrats in Olympia deciding how to spend that money. Like, that's just a redistribution of tax money to people who are more sane.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. On Linwood and the shooting at the Alderwood Mall, Scotty K, everything the AG has done for law enforcement has made the cops' job more difficult. Yet he's out there saying that he'll hire more law enforcement. Who, Bob? Who? But it's just
an owl commercial.
Who? I mean, who wants to work for him?
We'll redo his commercial and have
Yeah, I don't. He just assumes that if you throw, but this is in all seriousness, he thinks so low. His opinion is so low of law enforcement. He thinks he can throw money at them and buy their dignity. Can't do it. Can't do it. They don't want to. Sure. They don't want to work for you and die for you, Bob Ferguson. Bottom line, you're not going to be able to increase the number of police officers because we've seen even $30,000 lateral bonuses are not enough to buy their safety, their family's future, their dignity, their pride. It's not enough. And shame on you for believing it is enough, but it doesn't surprise me one freaking bit. Let's see. On Ferguson, Matthew says, yep, that's the Burien 4th of July parade. Oh, the picture of him in front of the Dollar Tree. He didn't answer when I asked him why he asked this. Matt.
I love it.
He says he didn't answer when I asked him why he asked the Secretary of State to break the law. You asked Bob Ferguson at the Burien 4th of July parade? Why he asked the Secretary of State? Why don't you film this stuff?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? Why would you not film that? Like, what kind of undivided subscriber are you? That's hilarious, though. That's good stuff. Okay, I think that's a good comment to end on. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. As more and more Democrats call for Biden to step aside in the race for the presidency, there are some diehard Democrats who say they're riding with Biden.
More people saying Biden should step down or more people saying you should stay?
We're riding with Biden. We're riding with Biden.
Did anyone mention Harris?
We are riding with Biden.
Was there a conversation about Vice President?
We are riding with Biden.
Was there a conversation about Vice President Kamala Harris in there?
We are riding with Biden.
Riding with Biden. Oh, either all the way to defeat or all the way to the grave. I'm not sure which one is going to come first, unfortunately. That has been your sanity check for today, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. For the record, I do hope the president still has many, many years ahead of him. I just would prefer that he spend it with the First Lady and his children and his grandchildren in health and peace and quiet.
Wild dogs.
Just want to make sure I say that for the record. I wish him well. If you have not signed up to support the show already, please do so. I just had Nicole looking at me. I was like, maybe, is that why she's looking at me? Because I said something really good. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. You can sign up for just $5 a month. Also, while you're there, we're giving you 25% off all of our common sense merchandise at UndividedPod.com. Use the promo code SANITY24. SANITY24. It's okay, Nicole. It's okay. I know we're going to run out of music, but that's fine. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.